Hello. Have you ever said to somebody, "That's not what I meant," or have you ever read something and got a very different interpretation of the email or the message or whatever it may be that you've read to the person sitting next to you, even? Well, we're going to move on to talk about language patterns and how language can influence understanding and how we can misinterpret what people mean by what they say. And so also how we can use non-specific language to influence people and get our message and our understanding and maybe some learning across in a way that people don't really realize what's happening. So in this video, I'm going to explain how that misinterpretation happens, how that misunderstanding takes place, give you an example or two, and then we're going to move on to look at a couple of models that are going to be really effective in helping you understand specifically what people mean when they say something. But also how we can use that interpretation to our advantage if we're trying to influence people to that win-win situation that we're always talking about. So let's have a look at the NLP communication model. So we respond to an external event, and whatever that event may be, that's we take information in from that event, and all of that available information is there. We process it, we filter it, we make sense of it, and it affects the way that we think and the way that we react, the way we respond to that external event. And in this particular situation, we're talking specifically about language, so about listening to the language or reading something on a piece of paper or in a newspaper or whatever. So we're taking that the information from that external event through the senses. And the filter, so that the senses act as the first filter on that information. And you know, we delete, we distort, we generalize that information. And as well as which, we also apply beliefs and values to that information that we hear or that we read. So initially, the senses filter out 70%-ish of that information, and then beliefs and values and metaprograms and primary sort criteria and our experience generally filters more of that information out so that we end up with a small amount of information which becomes our perception or our internal representation of the event, of the communication in this case. That affects the way that we feel, so our internal state is affected by our perception of the situation. That changes our physiology, which has a knock-on effect to state and internal representation again, because as you know, if we're feeling ill, our internal state is affected, and that affects the way we perceive the world around us, for example. And then we respond. So we behave in a way that's responding to that external event. And that gets some results, and those results become an external event. So we kind of go round and round that loop, and we very often reinforce that loop and the behaviors that we exhibit. So let's take a very simple example. Let's say somebody has asked you a very simple question. So you've been asked, "How did you get here today?" How do you answer that question? I guess most people would answer it in terms of, "I came by car," or "I walked here today," or "I came on a bus," or "I used a train," whatever it may be. But what if that's not the meaning of the question? Because what you've done with that question is you've taken that information in and you've deleted, you've distorted, and you've generalized. And what you've done is you've taken that external event, which is the question of how did you get here today? And you've made a big generalization. And the generalization is that when people ask you that question, what they want to know is the mode of transport you used to arrive at this place today. So you've distorted, deleted, generalized. You've made an internal representation, which is the answer to the question, or the question is, what mode of transport did you use? That affects your state, your physiology, maybe not in any major way. And then you behave in a way which says, "I came by car." But what else could somebody want to know from that question, "How did you get here today?" Maybe they want to know what route you took. Maybe they want to know what happened in your life that led you to be in this room today, in my case, on the course. They're all the same question, "How did you get here today?" But the meaning behind that question is very different. And so if you say, well, if somebody asked you the question, how did you get here today, wanting to know about your work career and your motivations and everything that you want to get out of being on this course today, and you say, I came by car, what's the result of that likely to be? Because that's a major misunderstanding. And so if the person asking the question then says, no, I meant what's happened in your working life to get you to this point on this course today, how does that make you feel? How are you going to respond to that question? So understanding what's behind the question can be really, really important. So there's two elements to this. One is that as a communicator, we need to be more specific. So if I had asked, what mode of transport did you use to get here today? You could answer, car. Or if I had asked, what's happened in your life that's led you to being on this course today at this time? Then you could answer that specific question. So as a communicator, we need to be more specific if we want people to do what we want them to do. But also as a listener, we need to be able to challenge that language to understand exactly what it is that somebody's asking for or somebody is telling us. So here's a quite famous example from quite a few years ago now. So not all of you might remember this. Those of you who are old enough might remember this. Now, I know this was a song by D-Ream that was quite famous in the 90s. It was also used as a Labour Party slogan coming up to the election in 1997 when Labour won and ending 18 years of Conservative Party government. It first appeared in a video, which was quite a cheesy video, trying to persuade people to vote, which starred Tony Blair, obviously, at the end of it. And it was the theme tune in the background. It then started to become kind of part of their kind of unofficial and then became more official slogan. Things can only get better. And I've got an abiding memory, which is seared onto my brain, of John Prescott dancing to D-Ream playing this at the Labour Party celebration party. I looked for the video, but I thought I couldn't really share that with you because I just can't get that out of my head, which is a bit scary, John Prescott dancing to D-Ream. But things can only get better. So as a slogan, what does it mean? What things can only get better? Better than what? Only get better. So that implies that they're as bad as they can possibly be right now in 1997. And, you know, some people would argue that actually some things have got worse since then. Some things have got better. So the implication that after 18 years of Conservative Party rule, it was absolutely at the bottom and it couldn't possibly improve. You know, things weren't that bad back in 1997. Children weren't going to school with rickets. There was less poverty around than there was in the Victorian era and so on and so on. So in reality, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And also, things can only get better. It's what things are we talking about? Well, as a slogan, it's quite clever because things, it's so non-specific that people will interpret that. Remember the external event being the things. And based on your own beliefs and values, you will interpret that in a very specific way to you. So if we just look at things for a second, then things could be the NHS. They could be education. They could be business. Whatever is important to you at that moment in time, you will interpret the word things as being that thing. So it's a clever slogan in the fact that it's so non-specific that it means everything to everybody. And it also means that at some point in the future, when challenged and say, you know, you said that education would improve, you could always say, well, no, we said things will only get better. We didn't actually specify what. So we will come back to this at a later point. But the point about this is that it is non-specific, so it is open to interpretation. And it's open to interpretation at an unconscious level. So politicians use non-specific language in their slogans. So we're talking about advertising primarily here. So advertisers use non-specific slogans. There's also a lot of non-specific language that's used either consciously or unconsciously by people all over the place. And you will come across this all the time. Here's another quick example, which is a little bit more up to date, I guess. I'm sure that if you're in the UK, you will remember this. Stay alert, control the virus, save lives. And in terms of specificness or specificity, stay alert. What does stay alert mean? Control the virus. There's an implication that if we stay alert, we will control the virus and therefore we will save lives. But there's nothing specific about any of that. There's no specificness about how we're controlling the virus by staying alert or how that is going to save lives. So again, it's a very non-specific language, which we can interpret in lots of different ways ourselves as individuals. So that's a kind of introduction, a short introduction to an understanding around how language can be used, and we'll talk about this later on, to get a message across to a wider range of people. But also, it can understand how we can misunderstand how the language affects what we think and how we feel and affects our behavior. So if we can't challenge that language to understand exactly what people mean by what they say, in some instances with politicians, maybe it's pinning them down to try and get a real meaning behind what they're talking about. But in general life, if people ask you to do something, if it's not specific, you might end up doing the wrong thing. And so we need to understand how we can challenge that language in a very kind of accurate way, rather than with a sledgehammer and just say, what do you mean? To understand exactly what's going on. So we're going to talk about a couple of language pattern models. We're going to talk about the meta model and we're going to talk about the Milton model. The meta model is a way of challenging non-specific language to recover the actual meaning behind it, and will then maybe influence other people's perception as well as your own. And the Milton model is about using non-specific language to get your point across in a way that people perhaps aren't even aware that you're making that point. So look forward to seeing you in the next video.